Thank you to the organizers for having me. It's a great opportunity to speak at this meeting. And as the title of the talk suggests, today I want to talk about how rotating black holes would respond to the perturbations that are sourced by an external tidal field. And it turns out that in order to understand the tidal effects of Kerr black holes, it is very instructive that we take a step back and recap how things work in Newtonian gravity. And then from then on, I proceed to understanding tidal effects in GR by looking at Schwarzschild spacetimes, Schwarzschild black holes, and then finally to Kerr black holes. Now, that may sound like a lot, but I promise that once you've understood how things work systematically along this logical flow, it is very easy to understand the tidal effects of Kerr black holes. I seem to be having some problem moving to my next slide. Let me repeat this. Great, now you can see the next slide. So in Newtonian gravity, imagine having a spherical body that's perturbed by a binary companion which sources the external tidal field. Now in the limit where the external tidal field is static, the induced mass type moment of this body is proportional to the electric type tidal field. And the constant of proportionality between delta Q and E are the so-called Luff numbers. So objects with non-vanishing Luff numbers will have this characteristic tidal bulge in response to the perturbation sourced by the companion. But of course, in practice, the binary companion is not static, but it's orbiting around the body. And in this case, the external tidal environment is varying with time. In general, the induced response would be given by the convolution of the total response function that I call F here with the external tidal field. But in the limit where the external tidal field is slowly varying with time, one can perform a systematic time derivative expansion and find this following relationship, where at leading order, we have the static tides, which I just described a slide earlier. Now we have a new term here, which is proportional to E dot, which is the time derivative acting on the external tidal field, and this term is called tidal dissipation. It has many names: tidal heating, tidal torquing, tidal acceleration, all of these names pointing to the same phenomenon. Now, one of the simplest ways of understanding that this term is a dissipative term is that this term is proportional to single power in time derivative, and so it is not invariant under time reversal, and so it does not conserve energy. New here is what I call the dissipation numbers, which describe the viscosity of the body, and tau naught is a typical delay timescale associated to this effect. And it is well known that this viscosity-induced time lag introduces a phase difference between the direction of the tidal bulge and the position of the binary companion. So that was the relationship in the time domain, and obviously convolution in the time domain is just product in the frequency domain. And so in Fourier space, one just obtains this very simple relationship, where omega now is the frequency of the external tidal field, and this total response function in Fourier domain has the following form. So if there's one key takeaway from this slide, if not from the entire talk, it is that the total response consists of two broad classes of terms. We have the real part of this total response, which corresponds to the conservative tidal deformability effect of the body, and the imaginary part corresponds to the purely dissipative effect of the body. So this very simple but crucial observation will allow us to distinguish between tidal deformation and dissipation of Kerr black holes later on. And I just want to highlight that even though these two terms appear in the same line of an equation, they really are very different physical phenomena. In fact, they even affect the phases of gravitational waveforms at different PN orders. Okay. So for instance, it's well known that tidal deformation first dephases waveforms at 5 PN order, whereas tidal dissipation of a rotating body first appears at 2.5 PN order in the phase of waveforms. So the goal of this work is to derive the tidal response of Kerr black holes, and the simplest way of tackling this problem is to solve the Tucholsky equation. So we've heard a lot about the Tucholsky equation throughout this entire meeting, so obviously I'm not gonna delve on this. But I just want to highlight that for our purposes, it turns out that it is very useful to rewrite the radial Tucholsky equation in this form, whereby we organize this ODE in terms of the poles of the equation. In particular, the poles of the radial Tukhovsky equation are at the inner and the outer horizons and at asymptotic infinity. Now, the reason that this way of writing the Tukhovsky equation is convenient and useful is that now it's clear that as R approaches R plus, as we approach the event horizon of the black hole, this term dominates the radial equation. And so if you want to capture all of the physics associated to the event horizon, you really want to keep the residual of this term, this P plus factor here, unexpanded in whatever perturbation, expansion, or approximation methods that you use. And it turns out that this residual term, this P plus factor, is proportional to the well-known superradiance factor. So how do we measure the tidal response? In Newtonian gravity, we measure it through the Newtonian potential. Okay? In particular, these terms that depend on the external tidal field consist of two broad types of terms. There is the so-called growing term, which is sourced by the external tidal field. And in addition to that, there are the so-called decaying terms, which are sourced by the induced response of the body. And the coefficient of these decaying terms are exactly the total response function. Just for clarity, R0 here is the size of the spherical body. So in GR, we read off the response functions either through the metric or through the Weyl scalars. But in order to make direct contact with the Tukhovsky equation and with black hole perturbation theory, it is much easier to measure the tidal response of curved black holes through psi 4 or psi 0, but here I choose psi 4 instead of through the metric. Now you may ask, you know, we know the Tukhovsky equation for almost five decades, but how do we read off the tidal response from psi 4 from the Tukhovsky equation? And to address this problem, I find it very useful to first compute psi 4 of a perturbed Schwarzschild space-time. And I'm careful in choosing the word space-time here because we know that from Birkhoff's theorem, the Schwarzschild solution applies to the exterior metric of any spherical star. And we know that in all of these cases, except for Schwarzschild black hole, the Luft numbers of a spherical star is non-vanishing. So by computing psi 4 for this perturbed Schwarzschild space-time, we can explicitly see how these Luft numbers appear in psi 4. And from that, take the limit, take the Schwarzschild black hole limit, see how the Schwarzschild black hole Luft numbers vanish. And from there, it is very easy to understand the tidal response of curved black holes. So in practice, the way this is done is these references have computed the metric, the 10 metric components of these perturbed Schwarzschild spacetimes. And what I've done is I just project these metric components, condense all of that information onto a set of null tetras and compute psi 4. And here's the result. And analogously to the Newtonian potential, there's a so-called growing term, which is sourced by the external tidal field, and the so-called decaying term, which is sourced by the induced response of the body, where the coefficient here is the Luft numbers. And one caveat here is that because the metric derived in these works were done in the strict static limit, one only obtains the Luft numbers, but not the dissipative response. But that's fine, because at least we know how the Luft numbers appear explicitly in psi 4 through these calculations. One other thing that I want to mention is that in GR, in addition to the electric type tidal fields, there's also the so-called magnetic type tidal fields. And one can show that the way these tidal fields appear is simply as constants, an overall constant here. And the real part of this constant corresponds exactly to the electric type tides, and the imaginary part corresponds exactly to the magnetic type tides. All right, just very quickly, I just want to quickly recap the famous derivation of vanishing Luft numbers of Schwarzschild black holes. So the way this is done is you take the limit where R0 is equal to 2m for the Schwarzschild black hole, and you impose the boundary condition at the event horizon of the black hole. And by doing this computation, one finds that this term has to vanish identically because it does not satisfy the boundary condition of the Schwarzschild black hole. And the conclusion, therefore, is that the Luft numbers of Schwarzschild black holes must vanish identically. But of course, that calculation does not tell us what the dissipative response of Schwarzschild black holes is. But fortunately, we can derive the dissipative response very easily through the Tukhovsky equation. long story short, one would do this by just computing psi for the Schwarzschild black hole, reading off the coefficient of the decaying terms, and out comes this final result for the total response of Schwarzschild black hole. And crucially, the real part of this response function vanishes identically, and this is the well-known result that left numbers of Schwarzschild black holes are zero. And now, in addition to this part, we also have the imaginary part of the Schwarzschild response function, and in this case, one can derive coefficients that is true to all orders in LNM in the multiple expansion of the
external. Minutes.
All right. Thank you. So this is the key results. This is the key result slide of this work. Long story short, one can repeat the same exercise for the with the Tukosi equation to derive the total response of curved black holes. And this is the result for the response function. And crucially, the real part of this response function vanishes identically. So the left numbers of rotating black holes are zero. And this is true for all values of black hole spin. It is true to all orders in the multiple expansion of the external tidal field, and it is true for both the electric type and magnetic type tides. I should also acknowledge that this is just a result that generalizes some of the partial results that's been known in earlier works for the small spin limit and for the dominant LHC2 perturbation. In addition to that, I also want to acknowledge that several other independent groups have reached the same conclusion. For instance, in this work, the authors have taken this zero as an input into the world line EFT calculations and find that they were able to reproduce the formulas for the energy and angular momentum fluxes from tidal dissipation. And more recently, there's these authors which have computed similarly and found that this vanishing response applies to scalar and electromagnetic perturbations. In fact, Mikhail will be the next speaker and he'll tell us more about his work. Now, the imaginary part of the response is a non-trivial generalization of the distributive response of Schwarzschild black holes because of the superradiance factor here. So in particular, depending on the magnitude of the spin of the black hole, this term can either be positive or negative. Basically, this is the phenomenon of superradiance. But crucially, for our purposes, it's important to understand that now, for a curved black hole, there are two time scales. There's the frequency of the external tidal field, and there's the spin of the black hole. And therefore, in the strict static limit, when omega is set to zero, tidal dissipation of rotating black holes is non-vanishing. All right, let me preface this slide by saying that I hate being so explicit about things, and I regret to be forced in this position. But I think it's fair to say that there really is a growing interest and confusion in the literature as to whether the left numbers of curved black holes are zero or not. So I'm going to make a brief comment on this. I know that Alex will be speaking soon after, so obviously I don't want to speak on his behalf. But I think it's fair to say that right now, it's clear that what Alex and Mark claim to be non-vanishing tidal deformability parameters, which they call left numbers in the first version of the paper, is not the tidal deformability parameter, but instead, it is the static limit of tidal dissipation, which is non-vanishing for the result for the reason that I just mentioned earlier. I mean, the thing that the computer is purely imaginary, as you can see. I also want to say that I regret that one of the reasons I think there's still persistent confusion about this matter is that in the revised version of the paper, which in what is now is a PRL, their statements, there's unclear what exactly is the interpretation, their renewed interpretation of the result is by saying things like, you know, assuming what they've computed is a conservative effect right now, I think that really is just confusing to the community. And I'm glad, again, Alex will be speaking later, and from the title of this talk, it seems that he will be providing some clarifications. I look forward to that. Very quickly, my last comment on this is that I worry that the left numbers literature is heading towards a direction where we're arguing about definition of left numbers. You know, do you mean left numbers as this term, the conservative tidal deformability effect, or the total response? And my view on this is twofold. One, I think it's fair to say that if you ask the broader gravity wave community, they would say that left numbers is this 5PN conservative tidal deformability parameter, but not the total response. But then again, ultimately, and more importantly, I would say that arguing about definitions of left numbers it's not very productive, because at the end of the day, what is important is that deformation and dissipation are two different phenomena. They even have different physical imprints in the phases of waveforms, and these are physical statements that are unambiguous, regardless of how you want to define Love numbers. All right, I believe I have run out of time. This is my last slide, but I will not dwell on it.